Good morning. This remote meeting of the Climate and Energy Policy and Finance Committee is called to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Leader Swiczynski.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bowe.
Always present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Hornstein present.
Representative Igo.
Igo present.
Representative Lee will be joining us later. Representative Lippertz.
Lippert present.
Representative Lisbegaard.
Lisbegaard present.
Representative Mecklen.
Present.
Representative Munson.
Present.
And Representative Stevenson will also be joining us later.
Looks like we have a quorum. Well, welcome back to day two, members of our Climate and Energy Omnibus Bill Week. Today we are taking public testimony. Yesterday, as you'll recall, we had our bill walkthrough and our opportunity for member questions on the bill. Amendments are due by 3 p.m. today, and then tomorrow we will do the bill markup. So we're not taking any official action until tomorrow. We're going to continue today with public testimony. So first up, we will have Commissioner Grace Arnold. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Arnold.
Thank you, Chair Long and members. So for the record, I'm Grace Arnold. I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce, and I want to take a moment to thank you for all the work on this bill and to express our appreciation for including many of the governor's budget priorities here. This morning, we wanted to highlight a few items to emphasize their importance for the future of energy in Minnesota and for our ability to be competitive in the clean energy economy. First and foremost, I'd like to thank you for including the governor's budget priority of the State Competitiveness Fund. The Federal Infrastructure Act passed last year creates an enormous opportunity to bring federal dollars to states that are prepared for this opportunity. The new law gives the Department of Energy 67 programs with applications opening in late 2022 before the next legislative session. These programs could mean hundreds of millions of dollars in federal funds dedicated to things like clean hydrogen and funds to help rural utilities make their systems more resilient to extreme weather. But there's a required match, and other states will get those hundreds of millions of dollars unless we're able to participate with matching funds. The funds from this competitiveness fund will help Minnesota communities and utilities to be competitive for those programs through matching funds for both formula and competitive grants. This is an extremely important item, in particular for rural utilities, so that they're able to be competitive for those dollars without impacting ratepayers. I'd also like to thank the committee for making a significant commitment to the weatherization program. These funds address important health and safety issues like asbestos and mold that prevent otherwise eligible households from accessing federal funds. We appreciate your dedication to this really important issue. We also appreciate the inclusion of the Solar for Schools program. This has proved to be an extremely popular program, and our first round of funding requests exceeded the available funds. We want to get more districts involved, and the funding included in this bill will help with that. I'd also like to acknowledge the inclusion of the three energy financing proposals. These proposals together are aimed at bolstering and accelerating the competitive clean energy economy in Minnesota. Those three are the Energy LA Startup, Grants for Renewable Integration and Demonstration, and the Energy Innovation Finance Authority. All of these together mean more businesses, households, farmers, and others are able to access capital for storage, climate resilience, clean energy, and energy efficiency, in addition to jumpstarting the economy through innovative, through seed funding and other grants for things like storage and clean fuels. These are all about growing all of these proposals are about growing the next generation of clean energy businesses right here in Minnesota and bringing those jobs home. So thank you for the work on this bill. It's a really significant step forward for Minnesota. I'd also like to note that the department is happy to discuss the policy provisions of the bill, but in particular, I want to highlight the Tribal Energy Council and thank President Larson for coming to the committee to talk about the importance of that provision of the bill. I believe he's up next, so. Thank you, Chair Long and members.
Thank you, Commissioner Arnold. Next, we will hear from Chair Robert Larson, who's Chair of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council and President of the Lower Sioux Indian Community. Welcome to the committee, President Larson. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Haumetakiyapti. Hello, my relatives. Good morning, Chair Long and members. I am Robert Larson. I am president of the Lower Sioux Indian Community, as well as the chair of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak and express my support to this committee, to House File 1647 by Rep. Hollins, which was included in this committee omnibus bill. This action would support tribal governments in providing fair and equitable services in an effort to reduce the energy burden of tribal members and create a clean and energy efficient future for the generations to come, which is how we try to make our decisions, right, for the future. There are profound inequities in energy costs and choices with the disparate energy burden experienced by American Indians in Minnesota. The energy and weatherization assistance models alone have proved ineffective to reduce these inequities. American Indians who receive assistance from these models still have the highest energy burden in the state. The Tribal Advocacy Council on Energy is reflective of Minnesota State Statute 216C.381, Community Energy Councils. Tribal governments will exercise sovereignty in creating such a council that is reflective of the unique status of tribal nations, made up of tribally appointed representatives. The Tribal Advocacy Council will be afforded the same council power and duties provided in the Minnesota State Statute 216C.381 Subdivision 3, inclusive of tribal ordinances. The Department of Commerce may provide staff time for technical support and subject matter expertise on efforts that we make to establish and operate a Tribal Advocacy Council on Energy. With the adoption of this legislation, tribal communities that are participating in the Tribal Advocacy Council will be able to bring energy issues to the council, who can analyze social and economic impacts caused by energy expenses, collaborate and problem solve with the other tribes on ways to minimize negative social and economic impacts with the collective consensus to prioritize and determine the appropriate action. This council would promote government-to-government relationships with tribal nations, in addition to developing statewide policy and legislation, gather input, gain council consensus on actions, and obtain endorsement from the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council for those actions. Additionally, it would be a consultative body that makes recommendations based on improved energy practices, including conservation, efficiency, and the use of alternative resources. Minnesota would be a model for other federally recognized tribes in their states to work together for an equity-driven approach for cleaner, energy-efficient future. The tribes already have similar process that has proven to be successful with the Advocacy Council for Tribal Transportation in coordination with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. The Council on Energy would be a similar structure, a tribally driven process with commerce staff support focused on energy issues. I thank you for your consideration of this provision, and I encourage the committee to pass this legislation that was included in House File 3337 omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, President Larson. It's an important provision, and really appreciate your testimony today. Members, we have about 30 additional individuals who signed up for public testimony today, so we're going to be limiting it to 2 minutes each for individual testimony so that we can keep on track and wrap up on time today. And first, we will be hearing from Andy Hill. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andy Hill, and I live in Woodbury, Minnesota here. I'm a teacher and a football coach at Woodbury High School. So I just wanted to testify in support of Section 11 of the bill that limits restrictions that HOAs can place on solar arrays. We moved to Woodbury about a year ago, and in December, my power bill was $360, and in January, it jumped up 46% to $525. This led me to kind of look at some different options, and I came across the possibility of installing solar panels. I went through the process with iSolar to get a proposal, and everything looked great. And then I remembered, hey, I better check with my HOA to see if this is something that we can do. When I emailed our HOA, they said that I could submit an application, but that all applications for solar panels had been rejected based on the aesthetics effect that it could have on the neighborhood. And then I was welcome to submit an application, but it was very clear that my application would also be rejected. So it's a longer process to apply for that type of a change. And so I didn't move forward with the application feeling as though it would be rejected. And I heard about you guys considering this omnibus bill with special consideration kind of for solar panels in HOAs. And I would love to have the opportunity to install solar panels. I look at it kind of from a bipartisan approach. Obviously, renewable energy is a good thing. I think that this would increase the value of my home and also the other homes in our neighborhood. Our Facebook group has got a lot of conversation about solar panels going around, and all of the comments have been very positive with people saying, hey, if we could do something to get the HOA to change its rules, so then we would, there are lots of people who would want to install solar panels. But for me, part of this is a hedge against inflation. You know, we've got a lot of money printing going on. Prices are going up. By installing solar panels in our house, I can then just be making a payment for paying off the solar panels and, you know, basically supply my own electricity and not be relying upon Xcel to provide that electricity and therefore be beholden to sudden price hikes or jumps in the energy market. So I guess one thing that I've thought of in knowing that I was going to talk to you guys today is that I love my house. It's a dream home for my wife and I. We've got two little kids as two teachers. We use the low mortgage rates to be able to move into a home like this, and I love it. If my neighbors put up solar panels on their roofs, it's not going to bother me one bit. I think it adds value to the neighborhood, puts us kind of forward thinking, as the previous speaker mentioned. But if my energy bill triples, then we probably are going to have to move out of our home because to pay $1,200 a month would be almost unsustainable for us. So, again, I'm very supportive of this, and I would love to have the option to be able to install solar panels as a homeowner in our homeowners association.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hill.
Thank you.
Next, we'll be hearing from Nikki Narasimhan. Apologies if I got the name pronunciation wrong. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hi, I'm Nikki, and I'm from Maple Grove. I'm a student and youth activist with YAF, and it's a subgroup of Climate Generation. I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm thrilled that this hearing is taking place because it signifies the possibility of great change. I got involved with YAF because a few years back, I began understanding how bad the climate reports were becoming. And what was even more upsetting is that I was never educated on it. I had taken several earth science and environmental science classes from first grade through 10th at this time, and I had never really talked or had a discussion with any of my fellow students, teachers, etc. So it was clear that there was a lot of miscommunication about how bad the climate situation was becoming. And what's obvious in the situation is that both the local community and worldwide are becoming worse. And it's creating an atmosphere of climate anxiety, especially for younger generations. As I continue to speak with fellow youth activists, with fellow students, it's becoming a more and more greater issue. But the funding pieces are inspiring, especially for this bill, because it's a chance for our community to incorporate climate solutions for some of the most integral aspects of everyday life, like the solar for schools, which could allow schools to save money on energy and instead use that funding to help low-income and minority students who are directly being harmed by these environmental disasters, especially locally. Climate solutions and education are becoming extremely important, and the more it's being ignored, the more harms or the more it's harming, again, not only our community, but the worldwide one. Bills like this are giving us a good chance at saving younger generations and just incorporating a very important part to everyday life, which is climate solutions. So again, thank you for consideration on this bill and the opportunity to speak. I believe bills just like this are what's going to help and save our younger generations. So thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. And we really value having young people in front of our committee and appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Next, we will be hearing from Bill Brandt. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Yeah, hi. Thank you, Chair Long, members. For the record, My name is Bill Brandt, and I'm with a startup company in Minnesota called the Zeus Electric Chassis. First of all, on behalf of Zeus, we wanted to thank the committee for visiting us last November. We thought it was a great visit. If you visit us now, it's going to look a whole lot different. We're actually right in the beginning throes of manufacturing our first five class five chassis for a customer of ours in California. But just a little bit of background for the rest of the audience on what we do. So we are a ground up designed all electric work truck chassis. So very much in this clean energy, getting towards zero carbon emissions for transportation, which is a huge contributor to greenhouse gases. What is probably maybe misunderstood with the market that we're in is that we are just the chassis. So we work with all these different body manufacturers all over Minnesota, all over the Midwest. Think about bucket trucks. Think about garbage trucks. Snowplow bodies are manufactured and upfit in Minnesota with a number of companies. So there's a tremendous amount of jobs today already in this sector. And we all know that the early adopters for EV for these kinds of applications are going to be where legislation is the strongest with the most investment. And that's in California, West Coast in general, and on the East Coast. But the opportunity that we have, so basically what I'm here to speak on is in support of the $5 million provision to help out startups and to help light a fire to the tremendous technology shift that's taking place right now and how Zeus could take advantage of that, but also create jobs in Minnesota. So not only would we be able to expand our operations in Minnesota, but we can take advantage of the literally hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on the East Coast and the West Coast and leverage the body manufacturers in Minnesota and create more jobs there. So if we're successful and we're one of the first EV chassis manufacturers in Minnesota, and we're leveraging additional companies that work in our industry, the money will be extremely well spent, and it'll help us to kind of accelerate basically our growth and therefore create jobs for Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Next, we will hear from Greg Seeland. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Greg Seeland. I'm a weatherization contractor working for the Department of Commerce. I've been doing work with the Department of Commerce for over 40 years, 16 as a private contractor. We go out and drastically change the lives of people, providing them with more comfortable and energy efficient homes, therefore saving lots of energy and doing good for our climate. Unfortunately, a lot of the eligible homes we're not able to do because of the existence of mold or asbestos insulation. And ironically, those homes are the ones that probably need us the most. My experience is those are generally older homes in regards to asbestos insulation, and those obviously we get our largest gains from when we do happen to get them when they do not have that insulation in existence. Also in regards to mold, a lot of that is indoor air quality issues, and the Department of Commerce has done a great job in approaching indoor air quality in regards to constant ventilation and other methods to make sure we create not only an efficient home, but a healthy home. Now, also within the program, we are really in need of more contractors to do this work. Those of us that do it tend to work generally just for the Department of Commerce due to the high stringent specifications that they require us to do the homes, so that they are not only done cost effectively, but also so that they're healthy. When we're done, we're creating healthy homes. And I think the beneficiary of getting more contractors involved with this will also make it more so that the general population has more, can get contractors to do the work. There's just not enough people out there doing proper and good weatherization work on homes. those of us that are doing it are generally doing it for the Department of Commerce. And there's a lot more homes out there in this world that need to be done than ones that are income eligible.
Thank you, Mr. Seelan. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we will hear from Dan Josephson. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Chair Long and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity this morning. I am Dan Josephson. I am the director of Energy Services for Mojave Otwa Community Action, and we serve Monoman, Hubbard, Becker, Ottertail, and Wadena. And we are one of 23 of the service providers that provide services to our weatherization program through the state of Minnesota program. And what I'm looking for through this and this testimony is give us opportunities to say yes to our weatherization program, because like our previous testimony, there's a lot of barriers that we do see. We do have the opportunity to reduce energy burden by about 40% with weatherization, but there's pieces that are difficult, or there's deficiencies of the homes, whether it's a roof leak, energy crawl spaces, there's plumbing issues, and these are the pieces that are the biggest that are challenging that we see that we have in our services. So the pieces that the previous testimony gave us was the real life in the piece, and that's the biggest piece that we see out there. And I have a serious passion when it comes to the poverty piece of the process that we see. You know, we see a lot of the worst cases out there, where those are the people that have the biggest deficit when it comes to the project. And I apologize, I'm a little nervous right now, but I do have definite passion for this process. So the biggest thing I see is give us the opportunity to say yes to homeowners that have the biggest energy burden. It gives us an opportunity to get a job out there for people that are graduating from high school or college or whatever it might be, learning a trade to get out and be able to conduct the conservation pieces that we work through and get this money spent for the federal government, for the state, and in the end, give us the opportunity to help our people that are in poverty and are the biggest piece of this. And thanks for helping us work through this process. And thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Josephson, for your testimony. Appreciate it. Next, we will hear from Aurora Votri. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, my name is Aurora Votrin, and I am the political director for the Minnesota 100% campaign. First, I want to thank Chair Long and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today, and for all your work putting together an energy omnibus bill that addresses Minnesota's growing climate, energy, and equity needs. The Minnesota 100% campaign is a cross-sector, statewide, multiracial, intersectional campaign to build an equitable clean energy future for everyone in Minnesota. We have almost 60 organizational endorsers to date. Our campaign believes that all of us have a role to play in transitioning our state to an equitable clean energy future. This bill provides more Minnesotans with the tools needed to play those roles. Homeowners, drivers, transit riders, Minnesota businesses, students, construction workers, and local elected officials would all be supported by provisions in this bill. We strongly support all of the provisions in this bill, but in the interest of time, I will focus on just three. First, I want to uplift the support this bill provides to local governments that choose to create climate action plans. Cities across our state are already experiencing the effects of the climate crisis, and this provision will give them the resources needed to be proactive in their approach to adapting to our changing climate at the most local level. Second, I want to uplift the investments this bill would make in the services the U of M Extension Service provides to farmers and local elected officials who are planning for future extreme weather events. This provision will increase the resiliency of our farmers, food supply, and the public safety of our communities. And lastly, I want to uplift the investment this bill would make in training the clean energy workforce that Minnesota needs through an innovative new program focused on workers who are BIPOC and who are new to the related industries. This provision is an important investment in equity and ensuring that the clean energy workforce includes opportunities for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And next, we will hear from Michael Noble. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Michael Noble, the Executive Director of Fresh Energy, and I'm happy on behalf of our staff and our board to testify in favor of House File 3337, the Omnibus Climate and Energy Committee Bill. Just to honor the time limit, I just want to highlight just four provisions that we're passionate about, but there are dozens of provisions in the bill that we admire, and we appreciate all the hard work of the committee members and you, Chair Long, for putting together such a comprehensive bill. First, I want to highlight, as did Commissioner Grace Honorable, the importance of the State Competitiveness Fund. We really have a historic opportunity to match and procure and tap into the bipartisan infrastructure funding that the federal government identified. We don't want to leave resources on the table and be left behind. So having that state competitive fund is really critical for gaining access to those federal funds. Also, I want to compliment Grace Arnold and the commission and the Department of Commerce and the governor for coming forward with this grid renewable integration proposal. Really excellent proposal, really essential. You know, how can we reliably, affordably, economically integrate more and more wind and solar into our electric system is super smart, and it's a very well-crafted proposal. Second to last, I want to highlight Representative Athena Holland's bill for electric panel incentive program. Making homes ready for new electric appliances, replacements for existing fossil fuel equipment, providing health and safety benefits, and modernizing our housing stock. We think this is super exciting, and we're very appreciative of Representative Athena Hollins for bringing that idea forward. And lastly, I would be remiss if I didn't tell the committee that I got my start in energy in the Low-Income Weatherization Assistance Program back in 1980, where I started my energy career. So I'm super thrilled to see Representative Robert Beardman's emphasis on expanding the weatherization assistance program and making it more available and addressing the health and safety concerns that sometimes make it impossible to weatherize these homes. So with that, I'll just yield back my time to the committee, and thank you for letting me appear today, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much, Mr. Noble. Next, we'll be hearing from County Commissioner Molly Malone. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you for having me. My name is Molly Malone. I work for the Center for Rural Affairs in addition to being a county commissioner down here in Murray County. My entire county is only around 1,000 people. We don't even have a stoplight, but we do have lakes, and we have Chautauqua State Park. The appeal of our natural resources means that the number of people in my district at least doubles when we fully thaw out. If you talk to the police, they say in June or July, it triples or quadruples. Campers, fishermen, Little House on the Prairie fans, snowbirds all come around to enjoy our space, and their presence supports our area businesses in a way that our small local population never could. We're only 8,000 people. In the summer, I see a few EVs here and there driven by tourists, but there's no public charging infrastructure within a 30-minute drive. If you were at the Capitol right now, you could get to Wisconsin and halfway back before I could even get to a charging space. We are a destination, and lacking infrastructure shouldn't be a barrier to exploring the state or boosting our local economy. EV charging stations at Tech State Park and all the state parks would allow more people to venture out our way into rural communities. And as a member of my rural community, I welcome the expanded access to our area. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. Next, we will hear from Logan O'Grady. Welcome back to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Logan O'Grady. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. MNSEIA represents over 140 diverse member companies who employ over 4,500 Minnesotans within the solar and energy storage industries in our state. Our members are mostly small businesses and experience the same challenges our other Minnesota small businesses face: meeting payroll, training, and labor shortages, fierce competition from the national market, regulatory barriers, and political uncertainty. One of the most important things we can do for all of Minnesota's small businesses, but particularly those in the relatively nascent solar and energy storage markets, is send strong signals via legislation that Minnesota is open for business. This bill does that and puts Minnesota at a competitive advantage for attracting and retaining new solar and energy storage companies to Minnesota, who will then create new jobs for years to come. I want to thank you, Representative Long, for your leadership in crafting a bill that will help us build the grid of the 21st century and employ thousands of Minnesota workers in the process. This 21st century grid will be cleaner, more resilient, more efficient, more cost-effective, more democratic, and more secure than ever before. And solar plus energy storage is a vital component to that modernization. Thank you to the other lawmakers who have carried pieces of this bill to support our industry. Representative Acomb, for your continued advocacy for the highly popular solar on schools and the ongoing work to modernize and expand the community solar garden program so that all Minnesotans, particularly our farmers and communities in greater Minnesota, benefit from that program too. Representative Hollins, for your forward-looking and innovative thinking related to energy storage. Representative Ryer, for establishing a new public-private partnership to deploy solar on public buildings, lowering utility costs for our local governments, and saving taxpayers money. Representative Wasilik, for standing up for property owners' rights to go solar in homeowners' associations. Altogether, this bill invests a historic $48 million into the solar and energy storage industries. Through the creation of thousands of family-sustaining jobs, millions in increased state and local government revenues and savings, and long-term commitment by MNSEIA members to our communities across the state, this bill will lead to a very strong return on investment for Minnesotans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Next, we'll hear from Josh Fisher. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Long and members of the committee. My name is Josh Fisher, here on behalf of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation, representing the automakers producing nearly 99% of all the cars and light trucks sold in the U.S. Rapid deployment of EV infrastructure is needed in Minnesota, and I want to thank the committee for including several supportive policies in this bill that will encourage charging infrastructure build-out. We're at a pivotal point and transformative moment in the auto industry. Reaching our collective goals is achievable as long as the necessary conditions, including charging infrastructure, are in place. To that end, this bill will provide a solid start for funding EV charging infrastructure build-out. We support many of the provisions in the bill, and I just want to highlight a few points today. We strongly support the modification of the state building code to require installation of EV chargers. Lack of access to home charging is a major barrier to EV adoption. As a first and most cost-effective step, states should immediately begin adopting residential building codes to require EV-ready charging capabilities. There's no question that it's much more cost-efficient to install charging or make-ready capabilities at the time of new construction. We also support the provision for utilities to file transportation electrification plans. Building out a robust charging network requires that all stakeholders be at the table, and it's critical that utilities have a role to play to ensure the grid is prepared. We support the provisions to assist our dealer partners with their efforts to sell and service EVs. We also support the prioritization of EVs for state fleet purchases and allowing installation of EV chargers at rest areas. There's no question that accessibility and visibility of EV chargers is a key aspect of an expanded nationwide network. And this bill will put Minnesota on the path to fulfilling its promises to develop a robust market for EVs. We encourage passage of these provisions and thank the committee for its consideration of our comments. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fisher. Next, we will hear from Kathleen Schuler. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Kathleen Schuler, and I'm Policy Director with Health Professionals for Healthy Climate. We are a multidisciplinary network of over 500 Minnesota health professionals. Yet another IPCC report warns us of dire consequences for our health and our planet if we do not limit global warming to less than 1.5 degrees centigrade through rapid mitigation efforts by 2030. We support the House Climate and Energy Omnibus Bill, which includes policies and investments that support and transition the transition to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050 to mitigate the worst effects of climate change on our health and build resilient and equitable communities and economies. Climate effects such as extreme heat, severe storms and flooding, wildfires, drought, and vector-borne diseases are increasingly impacting the physical and mental health of Minnesotans. Climate change is also increasing our exposure to air pollution. Our summers are getting hotter, which means higher ozone levels. Increasing exposure to wildfire smoke exacerbates asthma symptoms and is associated with increased risk of respiratory infections and deaths from all causes. An alarming 91% of communities of color and indigenous communities are already exposed to levels of air pollution above health guidelines. This bill authorizes investments that will reduce greenhouse gas emissions and air pollution to save lives and improve public health. For example, state investments in weatherization will reduce greenhouse gases, contribute to healthy homes, and save money on energy costs for families, especially those who can least afford it. Investments in economic development and green jobs training will benefit our climate and provide a pathway to well-paying jobs and increased family and community wealth. Climate policies and investments in this bill will help Minnesota reduce carbon emissions and contribute to healthier lives and a more equitable economy for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, we will hear from Sherry Hansen. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Sherry Hansen, and I'm the Director of Advocacy for the American Institute of Architects, Minnesota. On behalf of the 2,200 architects and design professionals AIA Minnesota represents, I'm here in support of this bill. There are many provisions included that will improve our ability to keep our state economically healthy, to slow the impact of climate change, and to provide public and private entities with the tools they need to bring our built environment into a more resilient future. We have a huge opportunity to reduce energy use and carbon production in Minnesota's built environment using tools we already have on hand. Nearly 40% of greenhouse gases in the U.S. can be attributed to carbon produced by buildings during construction and everyday heating, cooling, lighting, and other operations. We believe that many of the provisions in the omnibus bill will help us accomplish our mission to reduce these climate impacts, and I'll highlight just a few today. In the course of their work, architects have learned that changes to building envelope, mechanical systems, site orientation, and more can make a dramatic difference in the energy efficiency of a project. Minnesota's architects are taking these strategies and putting them to use for private sector clients, but it's time to expand opportunities for an accelerated energy code to help us translate that success even further into the private sector, which is why we support the provision allowing cities to adopt the most advanced energy codes. If we do not more rapidly update our commercial building energy standards, we're setting ourselves up to pay more in the future through costly retrofits and increasing energy assistance funding needs. Today's baseline code building is tomorrow's energy assistance request. While our preference would be for an acceleration of the statewide energy code process, we feel that giving cities the option to move to the next standard more quickly is a reasonable compromise that moves Minnesota in the right direction. We'd also like to underscore our support for the Building Energy Benchmarking Program in the bill. Benchmarking is a tool that has already made a significant positive impact on our public buildings. Broadening its use, as proposed here, will empower building owners, users, and tenants to make the best decisions available to them regarding energy usage and efficiency measures. It will also provide better data about our areas of greatest opportunity in Minnesota's built environment, as will the provision of the bill funding research on future weather trends to determine how we can build stronger, more energy efficient, and resilient buildings that prepare us for what's ahead. We support many other provisions of the omnibus bill, including the creation of an environmental standards procurement task force, local government climate action grants, and adjustments to on-site energy generation requirements for SB 2030 compliance. But in the interest of time, I'll just say thank you to Chair Long for bringing this bill forward and urge you all to keep as many of these provisions moving forward as possible. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, we will be hearing from Shane Zart. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Shane Zart with the firm Flaherty & Hood, and testifying on behalf of the Coalition of Utility Cities. which is a group of cities that host some of the state's largest investor-owned power plants. And since the committee just heard great testimony just last week from the city of Cohasset on the Community Energy Transition Grant Program, I can keep it straightforward and simply say thank you for the inclusion of $2 million for that program to enable additional grants to power plant host communities. And the amount in the bill is not our full request, and of course we hope that more can be appropriate as the session moves forward, but we're also thrilled that the funds in the bill are from the general fund. As the committee's aware, the 2020 appropriation was from the RDA Renewable Development Account, and those grants did great work, but they were limited to communities within XL service territory. The general funds in this bill will make it possible for communities to participate in the program that were not eligible for the first grant round. So thank you for that. Also appreciate the inclusion of most of the policy provisions from Representative Christensen's House File 3985 that are designed to support communities and improve the program. There's one that was not included that was would have clarified grant eligibility for cities like Red Wing and surrounding communities where future plans for the Prairie Island plant are not yet certain. And we certainly hope that can receive further consideration as session moves forward as well. But so I'll conclude with an invitation. And I know that when your schedules allow, and many of you have very busy summers, I'd like to invite some of the Energy Committee members to come out and visit communities like Becker, Cohasset, Oak Park Heights, to talk with community leaders about the work they're doing to prepare for these transitions. Again, I know many of you will be very busy, but I'm happy to do a role and help facilitate some of that. And I think it'd be a worthwhile effort for the Energy Committee. And with that, I'll thank you again and appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much. Next, we will hear from Jamie Fitzke. Welcome back to the committee.
Hi, good morning, Chair Akam, or Chair Long, and members of the Energy Committee. I'm Jamie Fitzke, a Director of Legislative Affairs for the Center for Energy and Environment. I'd like to thank Representative Long, members, and staff for their work in assembling an ambitious, forward-looking bill and highlight some of the sections where policy and funding will improve the efficiency and quality of Minnesota's homes, businesses, and communities. In particular, House File 3337 includes policies that provide transparency and information to compare and understand energy use for large building owners and tenants through energy benchmarking. There is new commercial construction energy codes adoption. This legislation allows cities who choose so to adopt ASHRAE 90.1, which is the Federal Commercial Building Energy Code, once the Department of Energy completes its review. This allows cities to adopt the energy codes 1 to 2 years before DALI finishes the review and proceedings. This bill ensures a unified statewide energy code and balances various stakeholder priorities. And I'd like to emphasize that passing this legislation would enable Minnesota cities to compete for $225 million in federal energy code funding available through IIJA, which they cannot qualify under with current statutes. And speaking of funding, this bill provides state funding for weatherization, pre-weatherization for income-qualified customers. And this will greatly expand the reach that these highly cost-effective and long-standing programs have in our communities. Workforce weatherization training grants will help to address the worker shortage in this industry, which is particularly an issue in greater Minnesota. There's also funding to support Minnesota communities that host power plants, providing funding assistance needed for host communities to create actionable plans so they can position themselves to thrive beyond plant closures. I'd also like to highlight Article 10, Section 2, which is the Minnesota State Competitiveness Fund to ensure Minnesota can compete, match, and maximize every federal funding dollar that we can qualify for. This is a rare opportunity for a state to obtain federal funds that other states will be competing for. And in this case, we kind of need to shelve our Minnesota nice and not leave half a donut on the plate here. We need to come in prepared and resourced to maximize the dollars Minnesota can match, compete, and win. Before closing, I do need to mention one area of concern. That would be Article 8, Section 12, the Minnesota Innovation Finance Authority. CEE has significant concerns with language pertaining to oversight and purpose within this provision, and therefore cannot support this section at this time. We appreciate the ongoing dialogue with the Department of Commerce, the author, and stakeholders, and hope to find an amicable resolution. This concludes my testimony. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzke. Next, we will hear from Joel Johnson. Welcome back to the committee. We have Mr. Johnson with us. But we can come back to Mr. Johnson if he is able to join us. We will move on to Annie Levinson-Falk. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Annie Levinson-Falk. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board of Minnesota. I want to thank Chair Long for including a number of provisions that will benefit energy consumers. In particular, the bill includes state supplemental funding for weatherization, including for pre-weatherization measures and workforce development training, as others have touched on. In the short term, this will help it'll help the people who most need it to seal their homes and permanently cut their heating bills, as well as to improve the healthfulness and the comfort of their home. The bill provides a right of appeal to utility customers, so people aren't in a legal dead end when they have a utility service dispute that's not resolved by the PUC staff. I understand that this brings Minnesota in line with the law in every other state. I don't anticipate that it will be used often, but customers must have a right of appeal in the few cases that it is needed. The omnibus includes Representative Rasmussen's securitization bill that was heard a couple of weeks ago, which will provide a long-term, low-cost financing option for big surprise gas costs that might come up in the future. This gives the state an additional option to help ratepayers avoid massive bill increases with a method that's been used for a long time in other states. And the last provision I want to touch on is that the bill also includes Representative Holland's bill to update the intervener compensation statute. This will support better ratepayer representation at the PUC and reduce ratepayer costs. On behalf of the Citizens Utility Board, I want to thank Chair Long and all the members of the committee for your work to bring this package forward.
Thank you, Ms. Levinson-Falk. Next, we will hear from Braden Solem. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Chair Long, members of the committee, my name is Braden Solem, and I'm the Vice President of Business Development at Ideal Energies. We are a commercial solar company that focuses heavily on developing projects for Minnesota's public sector. We work closely with many school districts, cities, and counties to develop on-site rooftop solar projects on buildings that directly offset utility expenses. I thank you for allowing me time to speak in support of House File 3337, which includes the additional funding of the Solar for Schools program and the Solar on Public Buildings Grant program. First, the Solar for Schools program for utilities located outside of Xcel Energy territory opened for readiness applications in January. There was such significant interest in this program that the Department of Commerce had to limit applications to two projects per district. So for many districts located outside of Xcel territory, there's been little to no opportunity to install commercial-sized solar arrays due to a lack of incentive programs to make the projects financially feasible, like they have within Xcel territory. For many, the Solar for Schools program is the first time they have been able to explore on-site solar for their school buildings. And from our experience working with districts so far, we found out that many have been waiting for an opportunity like this and are excited for the opportunity to participate in the program. With the ample demand for the solar grants, this year's funding for the program is likely already allocated within the first round of applications. And we anticipate there is more than enough demand for the program to utilize all the potential funding for the program as allocated in this omnibus bill. Similarly, the Solar for Public Buildings grant program will offer many cities, counties, and state agencies the first opportunity to install solar, as there's also been a lack of incentive programs for these public entities to install solar as well outside of Xcel territory. The solar arrays that qualify for this program are also uniquely sized for public infrastructure, like police and fire stations, city halls, and county buildings with the 40-kilowatt cap, so it'll be a great fit. And as you can see, both these programs are primed for success. These programs offer public institutions their first opportunity to install solar, and we anticipate that they are excited and ready to participate. The result of these programs is going to be a significant reduction in the cost of energy to participating public entities for years to come. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, we will hear from Pete Klein. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Peter Klein, Vice President of Finance for the St. Paul Port Authority. The St. Paul Port Authority would like to testify. I'd like to testify in support of the Innovation Finance Authority. The St. Paul Port Authority administers energy financing programs throughout the state of Minnesota, and we often become aware of good projects that we're just not able to fully help. And I'd like to go through a few examples across the spectrum of size of these projects. So we're currently working with a resort in northern Minnesota and a manufacturer in Pine County. The real estate values of those sites limit our ability to finance using our PACE program, Property Assessed Clean Energy. So we're able to fund a very small percentage of what they're looking to do as far as solar and energy storage. On the medium-sized projects, I've come across dozens of condo projects on the efficiency side that we just have not been able to use PACE, to fund those projects. And so condos are a great area that I think the Innovation Finance Authority could help with. And on the larger scale, there's a 100-plus acre large mixed-use development that's just starting. Its goal is to be net zero, and there's immediate upfront infrastructure costs that need to be financed, and the Innovation Finance Authority could come in, finance those with patient capital, and they'll be taken out in 5 years or so once the entire site is built out. To conclude, energy financing is not a zero-sum game, and the Innovation Finance Authority will drive much more financing and projects, and the private sector will finance a great deal more projects with the existence of the Innovation Finance Authority. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Klein. Those are very helpful examples. Next, we will hear from Chris Baker. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Chris Baker, and I'm a project executive at Willdan, a professional services and consulting firm with an office in Minnetonka. Thank you for the opportunity to join you today and to provide testimony in support of House File 3337, the House Energy Omnibus Bill. For over 55 years, Willdan has delivered industry-leading engineering and energy solutions that have transformed government and commerce, having implemented over 100 utility energy efficiency programs and served 230,000 small business, healthcare, hospitality, and education customers nationwide. The House Energy Omnibus Bill will help continue Minnesota's transition towards a clean energy future. It invests in innovative technology that will be key to supporting economic development, jobs, and business growth, while curbing greenhouse gas emissions across our state. Minnesota policies promoting energy efficiency and renewable energy have allowed us to build a business that employs more than 50 Minnesotans and to be competitive nationally with the expertise we have developed here in Minnesota. More than a one-time investment, this bill sets up Minnesota to be a leader and future hub for green technology with the creation of the Energy Ally Startup Fund for decarbonization technology and the Minnesota Innovation Finance Authority for clean energy projects. These financing tools will give green technology entrepreneurs the resources they need to grow, create good paying jobs, and build a clean energy future. Another key part of this bill is the State Competitiveness Fund. The $20 million total will help to give local units of government and other organizations throughout Minnesota the best possible opportunity to get federal funds from the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Without the resources to bid for these competitive funds, our state will lose out on millions of dollars in infrastructure and investment. Maximizing these competitive federal funds for our state is a common goal we can all support. Our work with schools, businesses, and local and state governments helps them become more efficient and use more renewable energy, saving them real dollars and creating local jobs. The financial tools in the House Energy Omnibus are powerful resources to make this a reality for more communities and organizations across Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much. I believe we have Joel Johnson back with us. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Long. Sorry for the delay. I've been having Wi-Fi issues here. My name is Joel Johnson. I'm the legislative director for the IBEW State Council. We represent over 15,000 electrical workers from 16 locals around the state. First and foremost, I'd like to thank Chair Long for all of the work this bill will provide our members. The grants for solar on schools and public buildings, for weatherization, for electric panel upgrades, for energy storage, and for EV charging station. All of this will create a lot of jobs for our members, as well as address growing needs in the state. We also appreciate that workers will be paid a fair wage on these projects. We'd also like to thank Representative Bierman for his work on the weatherization provision and helping all the stakeholders sort through the training portion of it. This is an important measure that will also leverage significant federal funding. We're disappointed, similar message as bogged down in the Senate. We prefer the language that came out of the process in the Senate and would urge the committee to adopt that language moving forward. Finally, we'd like to thank Chair Long and the members of this committee for your continued focus on the workers and communities impacted when power plants close. Representative Christensen, in particular, you've been such a powerful advocate for the King workers and the surrounding communities. Thank you for that. Thank you again for allowing me to testify. And again, sorry for the technology delay. I'll hang around in case there are any questions. Thank you.
No problem at all. I'm glad you were able to join us. Next, we will hear from Caroline Berninger.
Thank you, and good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Caroline Berninger. I'm a transportation and fuels public policy manager at the Great Plains Institute, testifying today on behalf of Drive Electric Minnesota. Drive Electric Minnesota is a partnership of automakers and auto dealers, electric utilities and cooperatives, local and state government, corporations, and non-governmental organizations that's working to accelerate electric vehicle adoption in Minnesota. We want to thank Chair Long and committee members for including a number of provisions in this bill that would support vehicle electrification and invest in Minnesota's EV charging network. Electric vehicles are an important piece of Minnesota's decarbonization strategy, and they lead to reduced transportation costs, cleaner air, and improved energy independence. First, we support state investments to make public EV charging stations available across more of Minnesota. Public charging is critical to reducing range anxiety and accelerating EV adoption in the state. We also support language allowing charging providers to install stations at rest areas in order to keep all suitable siting options on the table, particularly as we think about implementing federal infrastructure funding. Second, Drive Electric Minnesota supports funding for electric transit buses. Bus electrification will benefit communities throughout the state by reducing emissions and improving air quality, particularly in communities of color, communities with more low-income and uninsured residents, and more people living with disabilities. As we know, these groups often bear the brunt of transportation pollution impacts. Third, we support increased EV adoption by state and local government fleets. In addition to reducing greenhouse gas emissions and improving air quality, fleet EV adoption improves efficiency and reduces fuel and maintenance costs for fleet operators. And finally, Drive Electric Minnesota supports investments by Minnesota's electric utilities and EV programs for their customers through transportation electrification plans. These programs increase options for utility customers and improve access to electricity as a transportation fuel, creating benefits both for EV drivers as well as all utility ratepayers. So that's all I have. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify and share our thoughts on this bill.
Thank you so much, Ms. Berninger. Next, we'll hear from Audrey Arquin. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Long and members of this committee. My name is Audrey Arquin. I'm a senior at Central High School in St. Paul and a legislative assistant with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment and the health of its people. Also, I'm the chair of the Minnesota Youth Council Committee on Environmental Justice, an organization dedicated to representing the positions and priorities of the young people of Minnesota inside this legislature. And I'm here to speak in favor of House File 3337. MC is thankful that through this legislation, important priorities surrounding increases in renewable energy generation, reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, and increased climate resilient infrastructure and funding are recognized. Furthermore, as a young person in Minnesota, I'm thankful to see the recognition for comprehensive and forward-thinking energy and climate policy. I'd like to highlight specifically a few pieces of legislation that MCA strongly supports. In Article 3, Section 4, we strongly support the Energy Benchmarking Program and standards set forth. These additions highlight the necessity for data-driven solutions during the climate crisis, alongside providing building owners with the necessary tools and opportunities to assist in the important task of reducing energy consumption. Article 6, Section 5, focuses on community solar gardens as an important tool to increase access to solar energy production across our state, while also ensuring that we continue to focus on the equitable distribution of new renewable development. These equity goals are further supported in Article 1, Section 2, with funding allocated towards the Green Jobs Training Program. This program will not only allow our state to build up the necessary workforce to help transition our economy, but will ensure that economic growth is focused on communities which have traditionally been left behind by our state. Finally, personally, I'm pleased to see the additional funding in place for the Solar on Schools program. No initiative have come up more in conversations with students and teachers across our state over the past year. And this increase in funding will not only continue to assist districts in energy costs, but also provide an important educational tool for students across our state. I urge that you support House File 3337 and help build a stronger and more prepared Minnesota for today and all future generations. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us and providing your testimony today. Next, we will hear from Brian Hoffman. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, and good morning, Chair Long and representatives. My name is Brian Hoffman. I serve as the Building and Energy Director for the City of St. Louis Park, and we're very positive about the provisions of this bill. And specifically today, wanted to share our support of 24.7, beginning on that line, that would allow a city, city council, to adopt by ordinance the latest ASHRAE standard for commercial energy codes. The reason this is so important is we need to take a step forward and build high-performing, energy-efficient, and sustainable buildings. As a city, we've been encouraging this, and by allowing the standard to come on sooner in some of the cities, I think it provides an opportunity to help the architectural engineering community design forward. And we start getting buildings that are going to be here for 80 years, 100 years, to be built to the highest standard possible. The code we're talking about is only applicable to commercial, industrial, and high-rise residential. And all of these buildings are designed by architects and engineers. We embarked upon building a municipal building recently and said, well, you know, we're encouraging others to build, so we better take the same approach and build our own high-efficiency building. We went out to the architectural engineering community, found a lot of excitement to be able to really take ideas and innovative thoughts and apply to a building. When it was being constructed, the contractors had no issue whatsoever building it. They're following the plans and the design by the architects and engineers. Construction went very smoothly, and the end result, it's possible to build a building that is very energy efficient. In fact, after you've operation, we're at net zero. And it's really the right thing to do going forward. So anything that we can do to help encourage and step forward is going to be helpful. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity today. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Next, we'll hear from Amber Backus. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association and its 350 franchise new car dealers located around the state of Minnesota. To reiterate the testimony of my colleagues at the Alliance of Automotive Innovation and Drive Electric Minnesota, we appreciate that a number of provisions from House File 1668, which provide tools to assist with the transition to electrification of our state's transportation infrastructure, are included in Article 7 of the Omnibus Bill. Specifically, we're grateful for sections 1 and 2 of the article, which require the state to prioritize EVs in its fleet purchasing decisions. Section 4, which establishes an EV training program for dealerships. Section 5, which requires investor-owned utilities to file transportation electrification plans with the PUC that encourage the deployment of EVs. And Section 7, which creates a grant program dealerships can access to offset the six-figure costs of becoming authorized to sell electric vehicles by their manufacturer. The program will encourage more dealerships to become EV certified sooner rather than later by lessening some of the financial risk of making these investments as the pipeline of available electric vehicles is still ramping up.
The $7.7 million in EV infrastructure in House File 3337 is also significant and will help accelerate the build-out of the state's charging network and alleviate the range anxiety that is a barrier to EV adoption. That being said, we prefer the dollars be redistributed to focus on gaps in high-traffic corridors where the underlying utility infrastructure can readily support the installation of fast charging stations. The money will go much farther and allow for a greater number of electric vehicle chargers to be installed. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify and for this committee's support of the transition to electric vehicles.
Thank you so much, Ms. Backus. Next, we will hear from Megan Hassett. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Long. My name is Megan Hassett. I'm the Midwest Clean Energy Advocate for the Union of Concerned Scientists, a leading science advocacy organization representing over 7,000 supporters across Minnesota. UCS is thrilled to support this omnibus bill. The science is clear. Limiting the adverse effects of climate change requires rapid reductions in emissions now. The IPCC report released this week underscored the need for bold policy to get there, and this bill is the level of ambitious leadership Minnesotans need. UCS commends Chair Long and this committee for proposing this historic investment in Minnesota's future, and we ask committee members to advance this bill. The investments in solar, energy storage, electric vehicle charging, local climate action, and clean energy transition and weatherization will bring energy savings, clean energy jobs, and reducing emissions and improving health outcomes across the state. An upcoming report by UCS and COPAL explores the benefits of a 100% renewable energy standard in Minnesota. We found a generation portfolio that reduces air pollutants, actually drives deeper carbon emission reductions and more equitable outcomes. For Minnesota, a transition to renewable electricity yields strong health and economic benefits, over $1.2 billion in public health cost savings, and almost $5 billion in net labor income. The policies and programs in this bill increase renewable energy, invest in distributed generation, and reduce reliance on fossil fuels. The more of that we do, the more economic and health benefits the state will see. Investing in solar energy paired with storage will also facilitate a more resilient, renewable, and economic grid. Energy storage can reduce peak demand and reliance on fossil fuels and integrate high levels of renewables reliably. Energy storage has important equity benefits. Reducing emissions in EJ communities, cost savings, and community resilience should be prioritized. Policy designed around community-centered outcomes and strong public engagement will help ensure the benefits of energy storage are accessible to all Minnesotans, particularly low-income residents and Black, Indigenous, and other communities of color. Policies that increase renewable energy paired with those supporting EJ communities and a diverse clean energy workforce, improving access to clean energy and reducing energy burdens, all put us on the right track towards steep emission reductions and a more healthy, resilient, and equitable Minnesota. Thank you to all the committee members who contributed to this historic package.
Thank you. And next, we will hear from Lucas Franco. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Yes, good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Lucas Franco, and I'm here today on behalf of Leuna, Minnesota, and North Dakota. We're a union of more than 13,500 proud men and women who build and maintain our state's critical infrastructure. I'm here to speak in favor of House File 3337. Our energy system provides more than just affordable, reliable electricity. It also provides jobs and economic opportunity to thousands of Minnesotans, including many Leuna members. We recognize that the state is undergoing a transition in how the system operates and the type of energy we use, and we want to make sure that high-quality local jobs and economic opportunities aren't lost in the shuffle. I'm here today to support important provisions in the bill that would streamline permitting of energy projects, strengthen worker protections, and ensure that Minnesotans don't miss out on the federal climate and energy funding opportunities. So reviewing those first, the bill would speed and simplify permitting for large energy facilities. The current process is duplicative, confusing to participants, and more costly than necessary. We can support economic opportunity and local jobs associated with clean energy development by cutting red tape for wind and solar projects without sacrificing public input. Just like most members of the public, our members don't really know the difference between a certificate of need and a site permit, and I don't think many folks do. Second, the bill would require utilities to report on and require the Public Utilities Commission to consider the local job and economic impacts of energy resource decisions. It's a simple provision. When we make decisions on energy, we're putting to consider people's livelihoods, just like we're going to consider climate impacts or other environmental attributes of a particular decision. Third and finally, the bill would establish a competitiveness fund that Minnesota can secure, making sure that Minnesota can secure every available federal dollar grant, which in turn will help bring investment to our state and cut costs for ratepayers. Thank you again for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you so much, Mr. Franco. That concludes the individuals who have signed up for public testimony today. I just want to take a minute to thank all the members of the public who took time out of their weeks to come and speak to the bill in front of us today. It's an important part of our process in the House, and I'm grateful for your testimony and comments on our bill. As a reminder, members, the deadline is 3 p.m. today for filing amendments. Tomorrow we will be back to walk through amendments and to mark up and move our bill. We have no further business before the committee today, so we are adjourned.